TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's news talk radio, TNT.
All right. Happy Wednesday and happy Thursday for all of those in the future in Australia. Some quick news. The Associated Press has issued an official correction for its not so inconsequential bit of reporting that could have easily set off a chain of events leading to a World War III scenario. AP reported erroneously. It says, based on info from a senior American intelligence official. Don't you love it how they always cite these anonymous officials, sources, who spoke on condition of anonymity. We've got a Polish politician chiming in, saying that Poland should rethink its position towards the conflict in Ukraine after a provocation on the part of Kiev that cost two villagers their lives, said Jaroslav Pakula, whose term actually ended a couple days before the incident, and was saying that. It seems maybe for now World War III has been averted, which is excellent news, very good news. That's today we can be positive. The propaganda has not succeeded. There's no way they can salvage this, to push forward a World War III event. So it seems we're in the clear for now, until tomorrow, until the next week when another false flag event, comes down the pipe. But I guess we live to see another day. But we've also got that Anne Applebaum, The Atlantic. I just can't believe these deluded establishment folks, that same Atlantic that talked about pandemic amnesty. And now they got a title, Anne Applebaum saying the Russian Empire must die. And the conclusion at the end, she says, we can keep supporting those Russians, however small their number, who understand why defeat is the only path to modernity, why military failure is necessary for the creation of a more prosperous, open society, and why, once again, the empire must die. My response to that, I'm not pro-Russian empire. I'm not pro-American empire or fascist EU Brussels empire. So my response to Applebaum would be, fair enough, but what about the American Brussels NATO empire? I mean, it's totally hypocritical. She's like, the Russian Empire must die so we can take over the world, basically. So, and it's not the Russian Empire oppressing me. It's my own American Empire and EU Empire that's shutting off my financial accounts and media, other accounts just for talking on the internet like I am right now. So, sorry, and no. There was a fascinating op-ed by Andrei Fursov, for me, one of the top thinkers on the planet. He's an eminent Russian professor, and I did the Google Translate. He said, we have entered a period of breaking one system and the emergence of a new one. It's a very serious shock. It requires two very simple things from people, simple at first glance, will and mind. The mind to understand the situation and not panic, realize that it won't be the same as before, and the will to resist circumstances and create in the space that belongs to us a society of the greatest possible social justice, possible given everything that's going around. He says that based on the period in which we live, we should be ready for a very serious confrontation with the dying post-West. It's an agony, but in this agony, the post-West is very dangerous. We need to live in such a way that later we would not be ashamed in front of our ancestors and our descendants. We need to correct mistakes so that our children are not ashamed of us, so that they do not end up in an electronic concentration camp so that they are not subject to the influence of corporations. So very powerful stuff coming from Fursov. I recommend finding some of his talks, translating some of his articles, Andrei Fursov. What else do we got going on as well? Andrei Kortunov, who I've met briefly in Moscow years ago, the Director General of the Russian International Affairs Council, he says that American attempts to preserve hegemony will only make the transition to a new world order harder for Washington. And he concludes that a return to the former U.S. hegemony in international relations is not in sight, not because America necessarily is inevitably becoming weaker and helpless in all areas, but because other players are gradually gaining strength, experience, and confidence in their ability to influence the future of our common planet. That means the U.S. will have to adapt to the emerging world, and so forth. So we are moving into the multipolar world, I guess. And just a reminder, you can listen to TNT Radio in many different ways through the website, tntradio.live, you know, on your desktop, laptop, or tablet. Download the smartphone app at the Google or Apple Play stores. We're also streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We got you covered on TNT Radio.
What matters to you?
They cover the important stories.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Reuters just published a climate doom-mongering story with a headline that needs no explanation. Climate justice gets harder as world population passes 8 billion. According to the writer, the UN's announcement yesterday that the world population had surged past 8 billion people signals more hardship for regions already facing resource scarcity due to climate change. Despite the continual debunking of Dr. Paul Eugenicist Ehrlich's boogeyman of an overpopulated world ever since the 1968 publication of his book, The Population Bomb, which I happen to have right here. I picked it up, funnily enough, in a used Mexican bookstore for like 30 pesos like 10 years ago. The Reuters article mindlessly paralleled Ehrlich's logic, stating that according to experts, rapid population growth combined with climate change is likely to cause mass migration and conflict in coming decades. Here with the full story, joining me once again is TNT Radio News producer Adam Ruckus Clark.
Thanks, Savory. That's right. According to UN projections, whether it's food or water, batteries or gasoline, there will be less to go around as the global population adds another 2.4 billion people by the 2080s. And of course, they made this milestone announcement that supposedly as of, I suppose this would be yesterday here in the States, November 15th, the global population, the world population surpassed 8 billion people. Not exactly sure how they determine such things, but who are we to argue with such behemoth organizations as the United Nations? They know such things. Globally, the 8 billion population milestone represents 1 billion people added to the planet, notably in just the last 11 years. According to director of the UN's population division, see, there's an expert, John Wilmoth, reaching 8 billion people is, quote, a sign of human success, but it's also a great risk for our future. And all of that was taken straight out of the Reuters article in question. But I would like to share what Ethan Huff had to say about this. This is taken from Natural News. And they say the corporate-controlled media is reporting that the total world population has now surpassed 8 billion people, which Reuters say is too many to maintain, quote-unquote, climate justice. In order to stop global warming and climate change in their tracks, claims the writer of the article, Gloria Dickey, a lot of these people, but not herself, of course, need to go so the climate can heal. If depopulation is not achieved, according to Dickey, then there will be, quote, unquote, more hardship for, quote, regions already facing resource scarcity due to climate change, end quote. Dickey's philosophy is espoused from none other than eco-terrorist Dr. Paul Ehrlich, who wrote a book called The Population Bomb, which our good friend Hervory owns a copy of, that basically promotes mass genocide as the cure for climate change. How dare you, Hervory? Keep in mind that Ehrlich's book was first published back in 1968. Even in that time, climate extremists were scaring themselves and others into believing that the world is widely overpopulated and in need of a culling. Dickey actually quotes the population bomb, writing that rapid population growth combined with climate change, quote, is likely to cause mass migration and conflict in coming decades, end quote. If you've ever seen or heard the term climate migrants used instead of illegal immigrants or illegal aliens, you have people like Ehrlich and Dickey to thank, as they are perpetuating the false notion that illegals are flooding the United States because the climate in their homelands is degrading. According to Joseph Vasquez, writing for Newsbusters, Reuters propaganda sounded like a scene from Hollywood director Ron Howard's Inferno when antagonist Bertrand Zobrist rallied against overpopulation in a TED-like talk-like lecture. And the Zobrist character just happened to be portrayed browbeating attendees over the planet's population nearing 8 billion now. Another thing worth mentioning is that in the population bomb, Ehrlich predicted that the world would become so overpopulated that it would eventually collapse in the 1970s. Obviously, that never happened, which makes Ehrlich's book a work of fiction. That anyone would still be citing it says a lot about the devotion of the climate cult, which continues to rehash its tenets as scientific truth. Ehrlich's promised climate-induced famines that would lead to hundreds of millions of people starving to death never materialized, obviously. Ehrlich also predicted that children born in the 70s and beyond would, quote, inherit a totally different world, a world in which the standards, politics, and economics of the 1960s are dead, end quote. I would argue that part might be true. There was one particular media outlet, a big one, Smithsonian Magazine, that actually dared to call out Ehrlich for his nonsense. And in a piece published there, they said that Ehrlich's agitprop, quote, gave a huge jolt to the nascent environmental movement and fueled an anti-population growth crusade that led to human rights abuses around the world, end quote. Vasquez, the writer on Newsbusters, asks, did Reuters memory hole this factoid when it decided to publish a piece echoing Ehrlich's alarmism? What do you think, Hervory?
It's absolutely nuts. I mean, I found a great Twitter account that my upcoming guest, I see he also retweets him, David Stockman retweets Peter Clack, and he's just telling it like it is. You know, he showed a photo of the recent COP27 in Egypt with all of these crooks, you know, Mark Rutte out there, Tony Guterres, Sek Chan of UN, and some of these other leaders. He says, this is a portrait of climate fraud, posturing as the saviors of the world. They are a breed of crooks getting rich by ripping off gullible Western nations. The UN-led climate hoax has been running since 1988. They want us to believe a pack of lies about Earth's climate. He had another tweet where he shows a chart of the distribution of all the global biomass. And he says, the human world is a vanishingly small part of world biomass. These climate crazies absurdly want us to stop eating our evolved diet of plants, meat, and fish, yet plants are 82% of global biomass. And so, I mean, it's just disguised eugenics and Malthusianism, and I can't believe they're getting away with it. It's really slick, you know, the marketing, all of this, the pumping into, you know, kids' heads. I mean, I've worked in middle school, high school, and university, and they've won the generation. It's like 95%. I've mentioned this before. I can't believe, like, they've brainwashed an entire generation. And it's eugenics. It's depopulation. I mean, it's crazy. All I can say is just make more babies. That will make them angrier. And again, if you travel the world as I have, you'll see it's mostly sparsely populated. I mean, I've driven through a number of countries. You get out of the cities, there's plenty of space. You just have to be willing to not want to live in a city, you know, to live without Starbucks and McDonald's and all of that. I mean, I love living in the Gobi Desert in the yurt, which I've done. And so there's plenty of space out there. You get a couple of camels and horses and you're good to go. You got food. There's, you dig some wells of the, as you know, the, my old Mongolian friends and neighbors did. You got water, food. What else do you want? So what do you think, Ruckus?
Well, good advice, except now there's a tool that's going to help all of the people out there to avoid some of the worst amounts of carbon emissions and greenhouse gases before they head out on their travels or before they decide where they're going to move to. Have you seen Al Gore's new app that can, it's like a map thing? I think it's called Climate Trace, T-R-A-C-E. This was released last week at the COP27. It uses hundreds of satellites, thousands of mounted sensors, and various artificial intelligence models to measure global emissions of different greenhouse gases from major sectors, including oil and gas production, waste disposal and management, agriculture, forestry and land use, transportation and power. You can go on this map and actually zoom in on the biggest polluters in your town. You know, that way, if you wanted to be, I don't know, a bit of a climate justice warrior, you know exactly who your targets are. That's all I'm saying. What could go wrong?
That's a very Soviet Union report on your neighbors. Good old Al Gore. Yeah, he visited my campus a decade ago where I taught in Mexico. They had to pay him $200,000. To bless us with his presence. And you couldn't ask him any question you like. They had to screen all the questions. You know, they had to screen out folks like us that would ask him the hard questions. So anyway, yeah, interesting times. We'll talk to you again soon, Ruckus, and we'll be right back after this break.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
We are worthy people. Albanians smuggled into the UK say they are excited for the future. Note, smuggled into the UK. It doesn't say Albanians smuggled into the UK are about to be kicked out again because they're illegal. It says they're excited for the future in the UK. They're just being welcomed in. The red carpet is out. They're being put up on cruise ships. They're being put up in luxury hotels, and I mean the best of the best. So yeah, of course they're excited. Who wouldn't be excited? I would be excited. If I was given a free hotel suite, free money, free everything, I would be very excited. But yeah, I'm legal, and I'm not getting it. It seems to be the way to get ahead these days is to get across the borders illegally, and you will be well looked after.
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Email from school about the incident today.
Scary.
Tell me about it. Did you have any idea that was going on?
None. I mean, you saw Derek at the game last night, too. Did you have a clue?
No, but you know, teachers like me, parents, we don't always know as much as you guys do. Kids hear first about what's going on with other kids.
Half the time, it's rumors.
It can be hard to tell sometimes, but if you're ever concerned about a friend who's having trouble with alcohol, prescription drugs, bullying, violence, anything, you need to tell an adult. Mom or me, a teacher, coach, school counselor, someone you know and trust.
Dad, no kid is gonna tell an adult about that kind of stuff.
I get it, but if we don't know, we can't help. Speaking up about a problem, that's what helping a friend is all about.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
A cashless society means zero cash. 100% digital currency means your life is 100% dependent on a power surge and the internet. Every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
And I'm joined by David Stockman, whose work I've been following for years, and it's a great pleasure to talk to him. He's the ultimate Washington insider turned iconoclast. He began his career in Washington as a young man and quickly rose through the ranks of the Republican Party to become the director of the Office of Management and Budget under President Ronald Reagan. After leaving the White House, Stockman had a 20-year career on Wall Street. His newest book is The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation Storm. His website where you can subscribe to his writings is davidstockmanscontracorner.com and find him on Twitter at @DA_Stockman. Welcome to TNT Radio, Mr. Stockman.
Very happy to be with you. Sounds like we got some interesting topics to cover here.
Yeah, most definitely. And feel free to speak uncensored, unfiltered, and take things where you like. But I thought we could start with your newest book. I just finished reading it. It's not that long. And I especially loved your recommendations at the end, which we'll get to later. But just if you want to tell us about your latest publication.
Yeah, I'm happy to go into the book, The Great Money Bubble. But I was listening to your last segment, and I can't help throw in this observation. I was born in 1946. The world population was 2 billion. I looked that up because of the hoopla about the 8 billion threshold crossed last week. So we now have 8 billion people in the world, four times more. And it's impossible to argue that the average person on the planet today isn't immensely better off with 8 billion people and all of the gains that have come from capitalist growth, technology, investment, and the growth of the world economy, and in particular, fossil fuels, which powered the entire expansion of the global economy during that 76-year period. So that's a slightly off the beaten track, but I think every now and then we need perspective, we need history. And that's really where I'm coming from in this book. This inflation that we're now struggling with, 8, 9, 10%. In fact, the producer price index reported this week was up 11% on a year over year basis. But my point in the book is this didn't come out of the blue in the last year and a half. It's not entirely something that sleepy Joe Biden came up with. This is basically the result of very bad fiscal and monetary policies that have been pursued to a reckless extent over the last 35 years, especially beginning with Greenspan's arrival at the Fed. Because unlike Volcker, who genuinely was an old-fashioned, old-school banker who believed in sound money and financial discipline and avoiding too much speculation, and certainly felt that leverage and excess debt was a significant economic threat, but he was kind of forced out of the job. Greenspan came in. He decided he wanted to be the toast of the town in Washington. Found the printing press, so to speak, in the basement at the Federal Reserve and went to town thereafter. Now, the reason I give this background is that if we go to that point in time when, you know, we had had some success in the Reagan administration with reining in government. We did not rein in the deficit for reasons that we could talk about later. But the economy did rebound when Volcker got rid of the double-digit inflation, and we had some strong incentives in terms of deregulation and tax cuts for investment and growth. So if you look at the world in 1987, we were on a path towards, you know, a pretty decent future. But the GDP, and this is the key point, at that point in time was $5 trillion. Now, that's sounds like a big number, but, you know, we live in a world of big numbers. Today, the GDP is $25 trillion. Now, in between that 35 years, there was a lot of inflation. But I'm telling you what the dollar value of GDP is. That's the important thing to look at, so-called nominal GDP. So it went up fivefold from $5 trillion rounded to $25 trillion. Now, at the same time, during that same 35-year period, the Fed's balance sheet, which is really a measure of how much money it's printed on a cumulative basis over time, went from $200 billion in 1987 to $9 trillion today. So if you do the math, that means the Fed's balance sheet, its money printing machine, rose by 45 times over that 35-year period in a context in which the GDP was only growing five times. Now, you don't even have to study economics. You certainly don't need you know, a PhD in economics from Harvard, to understand that you can't have the Federal Reserve, the central bank, injecting credit and liquidity into the economy at a rate that is 9 times faster than the underlying economy is growing. If you do that, and this is what sound money people have known for decades and decades, if not centuries, if you do that, you're going to create all kinds of errors, distortions, contortions, malinvestments, as we call it, in both the financial system and in the real economy. And that's what we've done. We've got a gigantic bubble in on Wall Street, in the stock market, in the bond market. Bonds are tremendously overvalued. They're dangerous to own unless you're going to hold them till maturity and you don't have any reason to have to sell them in the interim. The stock market is overvalued tremendously, 40, 50% in my judgment. So what the crazy money printing did was give the wrong message to all the actors in the economic system. The people on Capitol Hill, you know, were told that don't worry about the deficit, you know, borrow $2 trillion, $3 trillion as we did 2 years ago, and so be it. It won't matter. Wall Street was told, don't worry about risk, don't worry about leverage, just keep, you know, speculating in the fastest rising, expanding bubbles that you can find. And if we look at the overall economy during that period of time, what is really startling is that the total debt, not just government debt over that 35 years, not just government debt, but private debt as well, household debt, revolving credit, auto loans, business debt, financial debt. If you take it all, it was about $5 trillion then in the whole economy on a $3 trillion or so GDP. It is now $91 trillion today. So
insane. So Mr. Stone, we're gonna have to jump to a quick news break, but I just wanted to mention that you're bringing up exactly what I had in my notes. How in your book you mentioned in the Reagan days, public debt remained under 50% of GDP, and now it's like, yeah, in your book you say 370% of GDP. I love the term you use, Washington's infernal inflation machine. And yeah, again, you cite Milton Friedman's calculation, as you said, you said the Fed's balance sheet should be $1.3 trillion, but we are at, as you said, almost $9 trillion and expanding at a $1.4 trillion annual rate. It's crazy. So we got to take a quick news break. We'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. NATO leader Jan Stoltenberg said there's no indication the missile that hit Poland and killed two people was deliberate. A Cali fisherman claims to have witnessed smugglers pushing migrants into the waters of the English Channel. Donald Trump announced a 2024 White House run in front of supporters at his Mar-a-Lago, Florida resort. NASA launched another Artemis rocket to collect data for future missions that will land astronauts on the moon again.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
We're back with David Stockman. Check out his new book, just published, The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation Storm. His website is davidstockmanscontracorner.com. In your book, I think you mentioned it already, that we've been witnessing decades of rogue central banking. Is it incompetence? Is it intentional? Is it both? And, you know, what can the Fed do? I was listening to Steve Bannon today or this week saying the Republicans should end the Fed. You know, your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, it's a key question. I mean, the problem in our economy today and in the world, for that matter, is threefold, the Fed. In other words, the central banks have gotten so aggressive, have gotten so dominant in the financial system that, you know, unelected committees, this federal, the Open Market Committee of the Fed, 12 unelected people, basically drive the important variables that shape and fuel the economy. So the question is, if you have a Federal Reserve System that is totally out of control because it was printing money, expanding its balance sheet at these tremendous rates, because 12 men and women were sitting on the Open Market Committee, FOMC as they call it, and in their wisdom decided, you know, we need to buy $120 billion a month worth of bonds in the, you know, treasury bonds and mortgage debt securities to make the economy better. Well, you know, where did they get that wisdom? Where is it written that just by printing money out of thin air to buy up government debt, you're going to make the system more prosperous? It's just not valid. So if we want a solution, we actually, without abolishing the Fed, I guess you could do that too, but we'll never get to that point because all of Washington and most of mainstream media and opinion thinks that you couldn't live without a central bank. But short of that, the one thing that we could do that would maybe pull this out of control rogue bank would be to abolish the Open Market Committee. In other words, instead of letting 12 people decide how much money to print and how big a balance sheet the Fed should have and what interest rates ought to be to the second decimal point and how much we're going to trade off, you know, employment for inflation and all the crazy things they do. But go back to what Carter Glass, who was the author, you know, he was the chairman of the Banking Committee in the House in 1913 when they wrote the Federal Reserve Act. And his whole idea was the Fed should be a banker's bank in which there would be no one sitting in Washington deciding how much money to create. But instead, you would have 12 regional banks spread around the country that would provide liquidity to the commercial banking system if they came to the Fed discount window with good solid collateral and were willing to pay the open market rate of interest plus a small penalty spread for borrowing from the Fed. Now, this may sound a little arcane, but it's not, because what it says is that Main Street would then drive the money supply. Main Street bar businesses and Main Street commerce working through their banking system would, drive how much demand there was for federal credit. And there would be a built-in discipline, because if the demand for federal credit got too strong, interest rates would go soaring higher. There would be no pegged interest rate like the Fed today says, you know, for a long time they had the overnight rate pegged at 5 basis points, which was ridiculous. But anyway, there wouldn't be any pegged rate. And if demand for credit got too excessive, too aggressive, out of control, interest rates would soar. And then local banks would think twice about borrowing from the Fed in order to expand their own lending business. In fact, they would likely do the opposite, which is shrink their loan books and thereby reduce their need for reserves from the Fed. Now, that's really profound, because it goes from what I call monetary central planning, where 12 people try to run the entire financial system and the GDP through the weak reed of interest rate manipulation. You would go from monetary central planning to decentralized capitalism. Commerce on Main Street would determine how much money the system needed, and it would be set at free market rates which automatically balance supply and demand through the mechanism of price, or in this case, interest rates. Now, that, you know, that sounds like it should be a possible solution, a reasonable solution. It's not something we just made up. It was the foundation on which the Fed was created in 1913. As I said, it wasn't until World War I where the Fed even had the right to own government debt, if you can believe that. But today, we're so far away from that world, and there's so much vested interest in keeping this money printing game going that it would be very difficult to try to convince the politicians in Washington to let capitalism go cold turkey, let capitalism decide how much money you need in the system, get rid of the Open Market Committee, remove the Fed from the heart of Wall Street. You know, if you look at the stock market hour by hour, minute by minute, half of the time, the only thing they're trading is some leak or some hint about what the Fed may do at its next meeting. They should be trading the future. They should be discounting, you know, the prospects of the thousands of companies one at a time that trade on the stock exchanges. And the same is true with bond yields. They shouldn't be set by what the speculators think the Fed may be doing at its next meeting. They should be set by the supply of savings and the demand for credit in the financial system. So that's maybe a little more than you requested, but I think that's how profound a change we need if we're ever going to get out of this money printing bubble ridden mess that we're in today.
And instead of getting that old fashioned capitalism, as you just mentioned, we're ending up with stakeholder capitalism, I think, as Cobra Commander Klaus Schwab calls it. And in your book, you talk about this collapse of epic proportions. And you know, looking at your Twitter feed, I think you're on the same frequency as myself and us here on TNT Radio when it comes to the green agenda, as we were talking about, the medical tyranny and many of these other things. And topics, I see them all. Yeah, I see them all connected. You know, I recently interviewed Dr. Aaron Heriati on my podcast. He talks about the biomedical security state. And you talk about this collapse of epic proportions. And, you know, my sort of question is, when will this debt bubble pop? And, you know, your thoughts on the World Economic Forum project, you know, of the Great Reset, and perhaps were they trying to front run the crash and then transition us into some new digital financial architecture, which is basically like an electronic concentration camp?
Yeah, well, there's always those kind of possibilities down the road. My view is there is a common core to all this stuff, the Green New Deal, the medical tyranny that we had with the COVID lockdowns and mandated vaccinations and all of that, the massive money printing that we've had at the Fed. You know, it's because they want the government to drive the financial system. That means the state. The Fed isn't like some, you know, magical independent institution that does miracles daily economic life for everybody. It's an arm of the government. The central bank is an arm of the government, just like the Defense Department or the Commerce Department. So the point is, behind all of this is the notion that prosperity happens when the state gets bigger and gets itself involved in more and more facets of economic and social life. And that's where we've reached today. And some of the points that you've mentioned are just a further extension of that. For instance, this whole nonsense about stakeholder capitalism. Well, there's no such a thing as stakeholder capitalism, okay? You have a balance sheet, and if there's debt on the balance sheet, the whole issue, the owners of that debt, the buyers of that debt are protected with their indentures, with the legal terms under which that money was loaned. And if you go down the balance sheet and you get into preferred stock or common stock, those are the ownership securities of the company, and they are entitled to whatever's left after the company pays all the expenses and does what investments that are needed in order to replenish its capital and hopefully grow. And what's left belongs to the shareholder. So, you know, the stakeholder thing is a lot of baloney. It's just a backdoor way of, you know, getting yourself ultimately to fascism, where you have an intermingling and meshing of the state and private corporations and the private economy. That's the last thing you want. I mean, if we can learn anything from the last century or longer, you know, since growth and capitalism really took off in the 19th century, it's that the smaller the state, the better, and that as the state expands, you end up with things like the Soviet Union, which collapsed under its own weight, or, for that matter, communist China today that everybody's huffing and puffing about, and I agree, it's a pretty awful system, it's a tyranny, but it's not going to take over the world, because sooner or later, this Ponzi, $50 trillion of debt they've put up, that's how they've created this economy, just by borrowing like there's no tomorrow, it's going to collapse on its own weight. So we don't have to have some big new Cold War with the Chinese. All we have to do is understand that we learned a lesson in the Soviet Union, and that is sooner or later, communism, centralized economic command and control systems don't work. They break down and they ultimately collapse, and the people move on to something different. So that's kind of a way of saying the real enemy today is statism, and the biggest proponent of statism is, you know, the guys that you're talking about, you know, the WEF.
The I call him Cobra Commander, Klaus Schwab.
Yes. And
yeah, many guests, as yourself, classify this as it's basically a global fascism technocracy. And I mean, one clear example, I was shocked, a report came out recently from the Foundation for Freedom, I think. Back in April, the Department of Homeland Security rolled out the Disinformation Governance Board. And myself, because of my podcast and a few others, we were banned permanently from PayPal. And it's clear now it was the DHS instructing PayPal to ban us. That's fascism. That's the classic definition. Yeah. And you mentioned China in your book as well. We got to jump to a break. While we are at break, you can check out David Stockman's book on Amazon, The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation Storm, and bookmark his site, davidstockmanscontracorner.com. We'll be right back on TNT.
The midterms, and America has voted. With his expert analysis, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Sometimes fire is cleansing and productive. Gold and other precious metals are refined in fire. Sometimes fire clears out detritus and enables new growth. When forests aren't meddled with, regular fires clear out undergrowth, return nutrients to the soil, and open up space for new trees to grow. Indeed, bristlecone pines require exposure of their pine cones to fire before they will release their seeds. Such can be the case in politics, too. Due to voter apathy and laziness, Congress has been allowed to become sclerotic with an accretion of octogenarians who have thrived by gaming the system in their favor. But their greed might have sparked the wildfire known as the FTX scandal to race through both houses of Congress and both political parties. The cleansing can't come too soon. It's never the conservatives, the Freedom Caucus Republicans, who get caught with their hands in the cookie jar. FTX might just be the best way to clear the decks of Republicans who would rather lose than fight for we the people and our republic. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Ukrainian President Zelensky is among five people named as recipients of the John F. Kennedy Profile in Courage Award for acting to protect democracy. President Zelensky was chosen because he has marshaled the spirit, patriotism, and untiring sacrifice of the Ukrainian people in a life-or-death fight for their country. The John F. Kennedy Library Foundation said, in response, journalist Gonzalo Lira asked, "So when you shut down opposition news channels, persecute journalists critical of you, imprison your political opponents, and in some cases have them murdered, that's defending democracy?"
Democracy is under attack. Western governments are trying to regulate the internet to shut down free speech. The UK government controls the internet. Disagree with what government is saying, and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to ofcom.org.uk. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
We're back on our final segment with David Stockman. His new book is out now, The Great Money Bubble, Protect Yourself from the Coming Inflation Storm. I usually don't even have to buy the books. I have the publishers give me a free advance copy. But I always buy the books, sometimes in hard copy, usually in digital format, because I'm down here in Mexico. It takes a while to get stuff down here. But I highly recommend Mr. Stockman's book. And maybe to turn toward, I don't want to give everything away, but just some general principles in terms of preparing to weather the storm, but maybe to start on the Bitcoin or the cryptoverse, which you call the bastard son of fiat money. You're not really a fan of crypto. I've always been skeptical from the beginning. What's your take on that?
Okay, very good topic. In principle, I would be a strong supporter of what crypto attempted to do, which was to create private money that functioned outside of the reach of the state, and the central bank is the most powerful arm of the state. The problem is the Fed and other central banks have created such enormous speculative activity in the financial system that when the cryptos came along after 2010, but especially after 2015, when values started to rise rapidly, it basically corrupted the whole system. And it turned what was a experiment, a kind of halting effort towards a return to sounder money than the fiat money of the central banks and the Fed, it turned it into just another speculative asset class. And once I saw that Wall Street was jumping into the crypto fray, and a lot of guys who blew up in 2008 and 2009 had come back reincarnated as crypto gurus, I knew something was up, and that is it was just taken over by speculators. And as a result of that, you had all of the shenanigans that have gone on. It's not logical that the market cap of cryptos could go from about $200 billion in 2014 to a peak of $3 trillion and then come all the way back to $800 billion today. That isn't money. That's not a store of value. That's just a huge, big casino being, bicycled up and down as a result of raw speculative activity. And now, of course, when this latest crash of FTX, we're having a kind of ringside seat as to what was happening in the interior of that crypto verse that, virtually sprung up overnight. There are 20,000 crypto coins today. When I start writing my book, there were only 15,000. I thought that was a lot. And a couple of years before that, there had been only a few thousand. So, what we have here is just a speculative mania. And when you end up with FTX being valued at $30 billion in its last funding round, which is less than a year ago, and now ends up over a weekend at zero, it tells you, that there's a house of cards here that is still got a long way to fall, to collapse, to evaporate.
And maybe just to look at a few other key principles or thoughts or suggestions that you include towards the end of your book on weathering the storm and I think those were extremely valuable. And I was surprised reading some of your recommendations because I found that I have intuitively been applying many of them already. But, you know, any other recommendations you'd like to let us know about?
Okay. Well, first of all, when we think about investment, we think about our portfolio, we think about building our wealth for the future. The focus, especially in the last 30 years when we've had these booming markets, is always on the asset side. You know, how do we find the next, stock or the next class of assets that's going to double or triple or quadruple and thereby levitate our total net worth or our level of wealth? But we're now at the end of an era where the central bank printing presses truly are going to be forcibly shut down. I think that's going to happen because the inflation has basically overwhelmed them. We're now in a world where the asset classes, whether it's tech stocks or, you know, just the S&P 500 or, you know, any other category you might want to pick, or alternative classes such as bonds and commercial real estate, for instance, none of those asset classes have much chance to appreciate in the next few years and have a good chance of suffering immense losses as the central banks bring the hammer down on inflation and contract the money supply, which is what they're doing. You know, they're shrinking their balance sheet by $95 billion a month, and that isn't chopped liver, you know. That is going to make a huge difference in the financial markets, the opposite of the $120 billion a month that they were buying that is draining out of the financial market and putting on their balance sheet. So, the point that I'm getting at, without getting into advice on this stock or that stock or this or that asset class, is you need to focus on the liability side, which is to say debt, and not on the asset side because it's not going to grow. And what you need to do on the asset side is basically trim your portfolio to get the winners out, the high risk, high beta winners, to get them out and get it into cash so that you can, use that cash if necessary to pay down debt, because that's going to be the secret to prospering in the years ahead. And that is reducing your spending, reducing your debt, and, tightening your belt, which I know people don't like to hear. But they've made such a mess out of things that that's the only prudent course of action.
We got a couple minutes left, and I did want to get a little geopolitical. You talk about China, the red capitalists, in your book, and how Washington's infernal inflation machine at the Fed effectively midwifed the freak of economic history known as the Chinese miracle of red capitalism. China's debt-entombed economy is not a miracle. It's better described as a Ponzi scheme. And, you know, we've got this economic crisis we're headed into. Historically, we typically find ourselves in sort of a phase transition, you know, a Thucydides trap. And we see a World War III scenario before us now between U.S., Brussels, NATO, and Russia and China over Ukraine and Taiwan. You know, any further thoughts on the geopolitical powder keg in the 3 minutes that we have left?
Well, that's the word, powder keg. I'm surprised it's gone this far. I've been very outspoken on the just insanity of this policy proxy war against Russia, the total lack of historical and contextual perspective. You know, it isn't that Russia, with a GDP that's smaller than the Metro New York GDP, is about ready to overrun Poland and the Baltics and Germany and the rest of Europe, say nothing of the UK or the United States. It's not a threat to Europe or the United States, and it doesn't have those intentions. On the other hand, the Ukraine is a civil war in an area that for 800 years has been part of the greater Russian sphere of influence. And most of the territory that's being contested, the Donbass and the areas of the south through Kherson and over to Odessa, are Russian-speaking, Russian-populated. If you look at maps before World War One, the area would have been described or labeled as Novorossiya, which stands, you're a Russian speaker, I guess you know what it means. It stands for new Russia. So
Mr. Stockman, we're out of time. We got about 30 seconds left. Your book is out, The Great Money Bubble. Where's the best place for people to find you on the internet?
I think the best place for the book, of course, is Amazon. On the internet, just look up David Stockman's Contra Corner, click on, and you can get directly to my site. We have a modest subscription fee, but I think it's well worth it.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Stockman. Keep up your great work, commentary, and analysis. Again, I recommend the book, The Great Money Bubble. We'll be right back after this break.